Forensic examination of human hair got off to a rocky start as far back as 1882. In a Wisconsin case that year, an expert for the state compared a known hair sample with one found at the crime scene and testified that the two came from the same source. The source was convicted, but on appeal, the Wisconsin Supreme Court reversed and said strongly, "Such evidence is of the most dangerous character." Thousands of innocent defendants could have been spared if that decision had been heeded. Instead, police, investigators, crime labs, and prosecutors plowed ahead with the analysis of hair, which was often the only real clue left at a crime scene. Hair analysis became so common and so controversial that it was studied many times throughout the 20th century. Many of the studies indicated a high rate of error, and in response to the controversy, the Law Enforcement Assistance Administration sponsored a crime lab proficiency program in 1978. 240 of the best crime labs from throughout the country participated in the program, which compared their analytical findings on different types of evidence, including hair. Their evaluation of hair was dreadful. A majority of the labs were incorrect 4 out of 5 times. Other studies fueled the debate over hair testimony. In one, the accuracy increased when the examiner compared a crime scene hair with those of 5 different men, with no indication as to who was the cop's favored suspect. The chance of unintentional bias was removed. During the same study, though, the accuracy fell dramatically when the examiner was told who was the real suspect. A preconceived conclusion can exist and slant the findings toward that suspect. Hair experts tread on thin legal ice, and their opinions are weighted heavily with caveats, such as the known hair and the questioned hair are microscopically consistent and could have come from the same source. There is an excellent chance that they could not have come from the same source, but such testimony was rarely volunteered, at least on direct examination. The hundreds of hairs collected at the crime scene by Dennis Smith took a delayed and tortuous route to the courtroom. At least 3 different OSBI analysts handled them, along with dozens of known hairs collected during the Roundup the Usual Suspect sweep made by Detectives Smith and Rogers shortly after the murder. First, Mary Long collected and organized all the hairs at the crime lab, but soon packed them up and handed them to Susan Land. By the time Susan Land received the hairs in March 1983, Dennis Smith and Gary Rogers were convinced the killers were Fritz and Williamson. To the dismay of the investigators, however, her report concluded that the hairs were microscopically consistent only with those of Debbie Carter. For a brief period, Fritz and Williamson were off the hook, though they had no earthly means of knowing it, and years later, their attorneys would not be informed of Susan Land's findings. The state needed a second opinion. In September 1983, citing the stress and strain of Land's workload, her boss ordered her to transfer the case to Melvin Hett. Such a transfer was highly unusual, and made more so by the fact that Land and Hett worked in different crime labs in different regions of the state. Land worked in the Central Crime Lab in Oklahoma City. Hett worked in a branch in the town of Enid. His region covered 18 counties, none of which happened to be Pontotoc. Hett proved to be rather methodical. It took him 27 months to analyze the hair, a lengthy period made even more remarkable by the fact that he was looking only at the samples from Fritz, Williamson, and Debbie Carter. The other 21 were not as important and could wait. Since the police knew who killed Debbie Carter, they helpfully informed Melvin Hett. When he received the samples from Susan Land, the word suspect was written by the names of Fritz and Williamson. Glenn Gore had yet to provide samples to the Ada police.